Hello and welcome to Redefine, your home for news about parental school choice and education reform.
Well, Dr. Vitti, thanks so much for taking some time out with me today. You said something recently that some school choice supporters probably liked a lot when they heard it, and some others may have wondered about a little bit, and that was, you said you're a competitor, and that when it comes to charter schools, the Duval School District has to outcompete charter schools and dominate the market. What did you mean by that? Can you go into a little more detail, and how does the district go about doing that?
Well, I think for years, prior to the choice movement, the public education system had become a monopoly. And what I mean by that is that historically, unless you were of significant means, meaning that your parents made good enough money for you to leave the traditional offering of a public school to go to a private or expensive private school, for the most part, you went to your public school, the one in your neighborhood. And I think what choice has done is injected a degree of competition where parents, if they're not satisfied with the educational services or offerings of the traditional public school, then they have options. And I think of parents as clients. As customers, and they now, many are leaving public schools, traditional public schools, and opting for charter schools in particular. Since the monopoly has been broken up a bit, it's now time to compete, and I think that was the initial thought in the choice movement. So as superintendent of Duval County Public Schools, I'm not afraid of competition. And the reality is the market, meaning the structure of choice, forces me to compete, even if I don't want to. And if I don't compete, parents will continue to leave the school district. And so my role as superintendent is to improve our product. And our product is our educational services. What happens in a classroom between a teacher and a student, and what happens between a parent in a school and a parent and a teacher, a parent and a principal, parent with the district in general and the program offerings that the district offers. So moving forward, I am looking at this new environment in education, in specific to Florida, as a competitor's market. And I have to compete. I am now a competitor, and I hope to dominate the market in showing parents that the programs, educational services, customer service is superior to the product in a charter school or even in a private exclusive school. And my goal is to bring parents back. And those parents that are on the fence about leaving, that they stay because they think that what they will receive in Duval County Public Schools is superior to something outside.
Well, it sounds like, from what I'm hearing from you, that you actually think the competition engendered by school choice is a good thing. And, you know, one of the things I did want to ask you was your big picture take on this stuff, and I think you just kind of answered it. It sounds like, on the whole, you see school choice as a competitive lever to make everybody better.
Well, I think the notion of competition makes everyone better. My only concern, and this is where you're right, in the opening question in my response, you would think that I was an unconditional supporter of choice, and in some ways I am. I just don't believe that anyone should tell a parent where they should send their child to school. I'm vehemently opposed to limiting options, and especially to parents whose children are in lower performing schools or parents that don't have the financial means to have the same flexibility that a parent would have of means. Does that make sense?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And that's historically what's happened with our public education system. My concern is that when there's one thing to promote choice, it's another thing to then use statute, so I'm talking specifically the legislature or the state board, to create rules and regulations that overwhelmingly support charter schools and create a disadvantage in the market to public schools.
Okay.
So, you know, concretely, to give you an example, charter schools do not have to abide by the same restrictions with class size.
Right.
Charter schools have more flexibility when buying curriculum materials. They have more flexibility when it comes to they receiving more funding in capital. All capital dollars over the past couple of years, PICO dollars, have been redirected to charter schools. I mean, those are, in my mind, unfair changes in the rules of the game. If we're going back to this competitors concept, if we're competitors on a field, on a playing field, and the rules of the game are adjusted to favor charter schools, then that's when I become a bit uneasy and a bit frustrated and sometimes even angered.
Well, I think what you said there dovetails with my next question, which is something else that you said recently that had to do with school choice. And that was, you said charter schools, or the debate about charter schools has been too focused and dominated by ideology and not data. Can you go into more detail on what you meant there?
Again, going back to why I support choice, I go back to supporting choice because I think parents need options, especially those that do not have the financial means to go to a private school. My issue is that beyond that, though, I don't think the charter conversation or the choice conversation, and when I'm saying choice beyond charters, I'm talking about vouchers, for instance,
okay,
or the requirement that or the opportunity for students to be able to attend a school that's considered higher performing within the district, is when the conversation becomes so one-sided, where it's categorically believed that charter schools are better than traditional public schools, or that charter schools are the panacea to public education, or charter schools are the panacea silver bullet to low-performing schools or low-performing students or at-risk students. That's when the conversation becomes ideological for me. And I think anytime any conversation becomes ideological, you lose focus of what's most important, which is children and communities. And the data itself, and that's when you go back to the data to say, well, what is data telling us? And in Duval, data is not necessarily saying that at an aggregate level that charter schools are outperforming non-charter schools.
Well, how do we change the debate then? I mean, how can we get it more focused on the data and the evidence, and how can we get people to take a look at the playing field and whether it's fair or not?
Well, I think it goes back to why I'm doing this interview is just educating people and broadening the conversation, and that I there's nothing wrong with debate. I want to debate. I want to look at the pros and cons of anything because we could get a better understanding of what type of system we can create that helps children, especially those that are struggling. But I don't want it to be a conversation to say it's black or white. It's either a traditional public school or a charter school, and there's nothing in between. That's not healthy. Or it's not healthy, for example, the way the former statute was framed regarding low-performing schools to say, well, if your school's not performing at X a rate, or your proficiency isn't deemed by this, or your school grade isn't this, then it has to close and it has to become a charter school, or it has to close and it has to be run by a private management company. That's not the robust debate and conversation that I'm asking for. I'm asking for give parents, give the school system the opportunity to debate the issue, require them to debate the issue, but don't force a particular governance model, a school structure on a community. Let the community and the district decide on their own what's best for children. And then use data to facilitate the conversation. There are charter schools that have a track record of success, and particular charter schools that have failed, and then failed in multiple areas. So, again, let's not have an ideological conversation. Let's have one based on data where we look at individual charter schools, individual traditional public schools, and ask the question, who's successful, who's not, and what's the best situation for parents based on what they're, how they're looking at it and has, and how the district as informed educators are looking at it.
Well, let me ask you this, Dr. Vitti. Now that I no longer work for a newspaper, I can go out on a limb and tell people my opinion now and then. So let me admit this, and I hope I'm not being ideologically motivated by saying this, but, you know, I'm a fan of charter schools like KIPP. I think there is data there that they have a pretty good track record, and yet I don't see districts setting up similar schools, or at least not aggressively setting up similar schools, even though that model seems to be generating data that's pretty compelling. Why is that? Why can't districts take some of these models that appear to be working pretty well and replicating them?
Great question. I know that was one of the questions that you sent me. First of all, I agree with you. Let me just say that. I think KIPP is doing some exciting things in tough areas, and I have a great deal of respect for KIPP because KIPP, unlike a lot of other charter schools, it's really driven by the issue of narrowing the achievement gap. KIPP goes out to areas where your traditional charter schools don't go, and they serve kids kids who are not necessarily high performing within traditional public schools. So I agree with you, and I think KIPP is one of those anomalies. And obviously, as you know, we have KIPP here in Jacksonville.
Sure.
I didn't bring KIPP here; it was here when I came. But KIPP is one of those charter schools that I am supporting, and I'll continue to support because I think they fill a niche in that market, going back to that analogy, that we haven't always gotten right. And this is where I think the opportunity lies, too, in that you can use a KIPP to learn from and to replicate some of their best practices and strategies in our traditional. But to go back to your question, I think your traditional public school districts are a bit afraid. I think that there is a bit of fear in allowing a charter school to come into your district and possibly outperform one of your traditional public schools. I also think that districts oftentimes, unfortunately, look at a child as an FTE and a dollar amount. And that's when we lose sight of what this work is really about, which is changing the life of a child and giving that child an opportunity to open a door that may not be opened without the right type of education.
But if you set up a model like KIPP, I mean, aren't you more likely? And it works. I mean, you set it up to fidelity somehow, and I'm not sure if you can do that or not. But if a district were to do that, wouldn't you keep those kids? Wouldn't you prevent them from?
Oh yeah, I mean, it comes back to the notion of the competitor piece. But you know, a lot of districts look at charter schools as entities that are taking funding away from public schools, and there's a reality to that. I mean, and that's where this conversation becomes complicated. In that, you may want to support a charter school. A charter school may have a great idea that would offer something to a community that the regular public school system can't. But at the end of the day, you are taking funding away from your traditional school, let's say in the neighborhood or in the district in general, because with that student goes a certain allocation of FTE. And even Title I funding, if that's the case, if you're talking about a high poverty school. So sometimes it comes down to dollars and cents, but the way I look at it is, if a parent, if an individual parent or a group of parents believe that that child will be better served at KIPP or another charter school, then that's that individual parent's right to take their child to that school. It's my responsibility as a superintendent to recommend to the board to offer that choice, but at the same time to compete with the charter school to keep the parents in our school district. And I believe that I can make our public schools better because of the competition. It's going to make our product better. It'll make our employees, I think, more aggressive with keeping parents, being more customer service related, and ensuring our product is better.
But is there any reason, just to go back to the question, and forgive me, but is there any reason why Duval or any other district couldn't set up similar models like KIPP or Yes Prep? And I know there's other examples of successful charters out there, so I don't want to just keep obsessing on them.
I mean, honestly speaking, in Miami-Dade, when I was leading our low-performing schools there, I actually used a lot of the KIPP strategies in our traditional public schools. I mean, they have great partnerships with TFA, with TFA core members. I think that they're not as tied to the notion of seniority and that you need an experience. They function more on promotion based on skill set and a track record of success. I think that they're more driven by culture, the idea of developing culture within schools. They're more driven by incentives for children. You see more technology being used in their schools, more data-driven. I mean, that's what separates better with parent involvement, much better with parent involvement. Mm-hmm. Tying the teacher to individual parents, ensuring home visits and thinking out of the box with when parent-teacher conferences take place. I mean, a lot of those things is what I incorporated in our traditional public schools. So this goes back to the competitor notion, which is KIPP definitely is doing some dynamic things, but there's no reason why we can't take those same practices and then implement them in our traditional public schools to the point where, to a parent, why would a parent leave their traditional public school where possibly they went to, their grandparent went to, an aunt or an uncle, and you go back to the historical fabric of the community rather than going to a charter school? So that's what I mean by competition.
Okay, I gotcha. Well, Dr. Vitti, I know you got to go. Thank you so much for taking this time out for me. I know as a new superintendent, you got a million things to do, so I'm really grateful that you...
Ron, let me say one thing.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
If I could, I use the word opponent when it comes to charter schools, and I want to touch on one issue that I have talked to the media about, which is how districts go about approving charter school applications. And what frustrates me is that a lot of the charter advocates want to talk about charter schools being traditional public schools. And then at the same time, you hear someone like me call a charter school an opponent, right? That sounds contradictory. But I think what needs to happen at the state level is a recognition if you want charter schools to really be part of the district's image and part of the just a natural part of the district's operation, then we have to revisit how districts approve charter schools. There is no conversation that happens between charter schools and districts regarding the application process. And what should happen is districts should be able to conduct a SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, and identify the gaps that exist in their district and at particular communities and say a charter school partnership would fill this gap. And therefore, the charter school is part of our strategic plan, and then they become integrated into the day-to-day operations of the school and the identity of the school district. What's happening is districts are forced to approve charters based on a boilerplate application process, which is, do you meet certain criteria? Yes, you're approved. And that then creates this antagonistic relationship between charter schools and districts, where if we were to get it right, it would be let's talk about how you can fill in gaps, and then you're naturally incorporated in our work, and it doesn't have to be a situation where we're at odds. And I think that the structure at the state level leads to that. Does that make sense?
Well, I think so, but there's got to be a balance there too, right? I mean, districts could quash charter applications that they deem to be a threat. I mean, that could be a problem too, right?
You're right, and that's definitely that would be a legitimate counter to what I'm saying. But you know, I do believe that there's a way to create a balance between simply approving charter schools at the district level based on a boilerplate application process or review process, and instead allow the, and require the charter school to be more strategic with the district. Or if we're not going to create some kind of balance between that, then simply place the onus of the application process on the state, because essentially that's what's happening already. And then the district has to deal with the oversight, the accountability, the follow-through, and there isn't enough money in the 5% district indirect retainer fee that's collected to continue to support charter schools through the district. And inevitably, there's very little leverage that the district has to hold the district, the charter schools accountable anyway.
So would you rather have the state be the authorizer?
I'd rather have the state be the authorizer under the conditions that exist now. Meaning if you're not going to change the application process to require charters to engage with districts at a higher level, then yeah, I think it makes sense to have the application process run through the state.
Okay.
Because what you have seen, I know, is that even when some charter schools were rejected, and in some instances, the state board reversed those decisions. So, you know, you can't, we got to create a balance. And you'll see me as a superintendent, and I think for the most part our board is willing to see how charter schools can be incorporated in our strategic plan. And we just approved a number, double-digit number of charter school applications in just a couple months ago. So we're willing to be friendly to charter schools, but we're trying to have them incorporated in our strategic plan as much as possible, because you have to talk about capital plans, the use of facilities. All of this plays a role in the strategic plan and the budget development process. And when charter schools are going in particular areas where there is no, when the enrollment is or isn't an issue, when they're pulling FTE from other schools, all of this creates havoc in the daily operation of the district. And all I'm saying is there's a way to create some balance so that these strains on the district doesn't create or exacerbate an already tense relationship between districts and charter schools.
Okay. All right. Well, Dr. Vitti, that sounds good. It sounds like a conversation to be continued. Thanks again for taking all this time to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.